Hello, my name is Brenda Hold. I am the Associate State Director of Community Outreach for the Arizona State Office of AARP. And while February is officially Black History Month, AARP began the celebration with the observance of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday on January 15th and continues the celebration through February 28th. AARP strives to develop a year-round appreciation of Black history, life, and culture by spotlighting some of the great innovations and contributions African Americans have made, such as what you'll see today. We are glad you could join us in order to keep the celebration and acknowledgments moving forward, and we would also like to thank Boom Goddess Radio for the opportunity to collaborate. We hope you enjoyed today's program. Be safe and be well.
Hello and welcome to Boom Goddess Radio. I am Jennifer Davis Page, your host. Today I have the privilege of having Dr. Michael Ings in our studio. Dr. Michael is the owner-operator of Arizona Heritage Tours. He is a history consultant for organizations like Canola Ranch of Pima County, Tucson Museum of Art, the Tucson Presidio Trust, and more recently, Black Pilots of America. Welcome, Dr. Ings, to Boom Goddess Radio.
Thank you, Jennifer. I'm really pleased to be here and for you to give me this opportunity to talk about African-American history in the Southwest.
I so enjoyed looking at the beautiful paintings of the African-Americans in Western art and Frederick Remington's depiction of the Buffalo Soldiers. Tell our viewers on YouTube and our listeners on Boom Goddess Radio the story.
Well, the story goes back a long way because I began to be a historical interpreter and a reenactor when I was 14 years old in Williamsburg, Virginia. And so then when I came out to the West, I met a wonderful woman named Gloria Smith, who's been my mentor ever since, who introduced me to the Buffalo Soldiers. And through her introduction and my research, I went on the road for about 10 years with the Arizona Humanities Council talking about the Buffalo Soldiers, and ran into the fact that they had done several, Frederick Remington had done several sketches of them while they were here in Arizona in the 1800s. And from that point on, I was hooked. I really liked his drawings, and it took me deeper and deeper into the whole story of African-Americans in the Southwest. Also, what happened was I realized, about 1993, that there were a lot of groups in Southern Arizona basically interpreting the Buffalo Soldier story. So I said, let's go back further. Let's see who came before them. And so this is the compilation of pictures that not only speak to the Buffalo Soldiers, but the early settlers, pioneers, soldiers of Southwestern United States, especially African Americans.
Well, let's go through them.
Yeah, I'd like to give a little background. It's because of my interest in Frederick Remington's depiction of the Buffalo Soldiers that this picture popped up. This is actually the 1540 Coronado expedition that came up from Mexico as one of the first major Spanish expeditions to come to Arizona in 1540. And I began to realize that even before that, the Spanish, like Coronado, had been bringing Africans from Africa, mostly Moors that were captured during the wars between Spain and the Moors. And they were coming up into this area probably as early as 1538. That would have been Esteban. And so when I saw this picture, it's probably a, for those who can see it, it's a oil on canvas. You can see the soldiers in helmets, which is a typical view of the Spanish colonial soldiers. They were the first to bring horses to this area, which you can also see in the center of the picture. They had Indian allies in most cases, which you can see in the left foreground of the picture. So this is a really good rendering of what the Spanish expeditions would have looked like. Hundreds of people traveling with their animals, which they would often slaughter on the way as food. And that's another whole story about how the Spanish brought different foods to the desert that had never existed before. So this is a pretty interesting rendering of what would have been happening about 1540. But we have to remember that the first expedition to come to Arizona was led by a man named Esteban. He would have come here about 1538, 1539. And one of the things I learned on this journey of exploration that I took to discover these pictures in this history was that we could create a lot of our own images based on what we see in the stories that I'll be talking about today. For example, I've got a map here. I'm not sure how well you can see it, done by a young man, Joel Harris, here in Arizona. And it basically shows the different journeys of the next person we're going to talk about, Esteban. Before Esteban arrived here, the Spanish had basically conquered the Aztec Empire, the Triple Alliance, between 1519 and 1521. And they had basically freed most of their soldiers for their military service, including people like the gentleman in the left of this picture, whose name was Juan Garrido. This picture, which is probably a painting, oil on tapestry or parchment rather, shows Hernan Cortez meeting Montezuma, and behind him, as his right-hand man, his bodyguard, his sidekick, is Juan Garrido. And Juan Garrido was freed for his military service after the conquest of the Aztecs. And he built a chapel to celebrate the Spanish and the Moors who had died in that battle, and planted a garden in the back of this particular place and a room for himself. He became the first master at arms in Mexico City before the organized government was established. He was protector of the water and the trees because the canal system in what was then called Tenochtitlan, now called Mexico City, was being destroyed by some of the conquerors. And he also was suspected to have planted the first wheat outside of the walls of Mexico City, a story we're still exploring and looking for people to help us by comparing the DNA of the wheat that's in central Mexico and the Sonoran white that we are so familiar with here in the desert. So these journeys of people of African descent, because Juan Garrido was a Moor, a person from West Africa, go back a long way. And the map that I just showed you basically shows the journey of Esteban. Next image. This is what I was talking about earlier. When we, meaning my partner, my late partner and I, Andre Newman, began to study these stories, Andre actually went to Morocco a year ago to even look deeper into Esteban's stories, because that's where he originated from. We began to realize that we could create images that captured these characters. This is a cottonwood statue carved by a man named Andrew Gonzalez. He was a lake fisherman in northern New Mexico. I met him while I was visiting family up there, and he takes a cottonwood root that's exposed after a flood. Usually they're about 2-3 feet high, about 3 to 6 inches in circumference, and he will take those roots and carve what are called santos. Those are the figures or priests that you usually see in old Spanish missions, especially in northern New Mexico, in the alcoves. And I was sitting with him one day talking about his work up in Santa Fe, because he was selling these santos at the Indian market in Santa Fe each year. And he said to me something extremely interesting. He said, "Michael, when you find a cottonwood root, the figure's already inside. I just help bring it out." So I said to him, "Well, gosh, Andrew, if you ever see Esteban inside one of those roots, you let me know, because I'll definitely pay you for that." And sure enough, a year later, this is the carving that he did. It's got natural dyes on it from caves in New Mexico. The yellow is a sand from an old cave. The red is the same. He used walnut and charcoal for the beard and the darker colors. And this is a rendering of what Esteban might have looked like just at the beginning of his journey to reach Arizona. Remember, he started out in Tampa Bay, Florida. He was shipwrecked with the Narvaez expedition. And then he walked all the way across the country from Florida to Mexico City between 1528 and 1536. And when he arrived back in Mexico City, all the people there had thought the expedition had perished. And in fact, most of them did. Of the 300, only four survived. And Esteban was one of them. But instead of being destitute, he had basically flourished. He learned all the Indian languages. He knew their sign language. He had the same kind of ethics and spirit that they had because they're animists. They believe the earth is alive. Everything on the earth is alive. And Esteban shared that because of his African ancestry. So the Indians were really taken by him. And when he helped cure one of the Native Americans, indigenous people on the trip from Florida, they began to see him and the others in the party, like Cabeza de Vaca and his then owner, Dorantes, as shamans. So they were celebrated when they got back to Mexico City. Probably the only people who had been at that far north in New Spain. And so Mendoza and Coronado said, this man can be of value to us. And they sent him north, and Esteban became the first non-native person to enter what is now present-day Arizona. Next image.
One question about this particular carving. Can you tell me how tall it is, this carving, how big it is?
You can see the dimensions here. This is Andrew Gonzalez, the carver himself.
Oh, I see. Certainly. Okay.
And you
I
can
see.
Get a little sense of the size of it from him holding it. Andrew was, I'd say 5'10", 5'11". And he carved many of these statues of about that size.
That's amazing.
Yeah, too bad he has just passed away. And so we won't be getting many more works from him. He had a piece of cottonwood that he gave me just after this carving was done called Father Kino. And I said,
You own this piece? I don't mean to interrupt you. Did you own this piece, right?
Yes, I commissioned this piece.
Okay.
Yes. Next slide. And then understanding the process that I was now involved in of creating images from the many, many stories that I had heard about Esteban, I commissioned another artist, Joanna Martinez. She's a muralist here in Tucson. You can see her murals throughout town. And this is an acrylic on wood. It's almost like three-dimensional. And she researched Esteban for almost a year before she created this particular image of him. This shows the Zuni country where he either disappeared or was killed by the Zuni. This would have been the year 1539. The interesting thing is she took old books of fashion from the Spanish and actually designed his cape from those patterns that she could see in the books. You also see the Zuni area, or Haiwaku, as they call it, in the background. And you see a very interesting symbol of Esteban. He always traveled after he had left Mexico City in 1538 with two greyhounds. And so the fact that there's only one in this picture adds a real sense of mystery. What happened to the second one? Well, we know from the first picture I showed you, the Coronado expedition, when Coronado arrived in Zuni to, quote, avenge the death of Esteban, he found that the leader of the tribe where Esteban was supposedly killed had a greyhound that looked just like this one in the picture. So perhaps it was that Esteban actually traded the greyhound for his freedom and disappeared into the north. Because remember, there were no European settlements this far north near what we call St. John's, Arizona now, and Haiwaku, which is in the Zuni country of New Mexico, right across the border. So he could have kept on walking and nobody would know it. What we do know is that over the years after 1539 and Esteban's disappearance, a lot of people of African descent began to appear in the north country of New Mexico, and we can't really tell where they came from. One perfect example is if you look at a map, you'll discover that the Zuni area of New Mexico, which is right across the border from Arizona, is south and west of the Hopi area of New Mexico. And the Hopis actually have a kachina of Esteban. Now, if you hadn't gotten that far, then how was it that the Hopi have a legend about him as well? So
Dr. Michael, we're going to take a brief break. I didn't mean to interrupt the story, but we have to take a break and we'll be back in just a moment.
My mother was always very active and independent, and she was familiar with her neighborhood. But one day, she stopped at the stop sign for much longer than usual. She wasn't even really sure where she was at.
It's important for you to talk to someone about it. I felt so much better after my son told me, Mom, we'll figure it out.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. Visit alz.org/ourstories to learn more. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Boom Goddess Radio, and we want to welcome back Dr. Michael Eanes. Doctor, would you kindly tell us, pick up where you left off and in the last break, please?
Yeah, we were telling the Esteban story. He's probably one of the greatest explorers of all time, who walked from Florida to Mexico City and then into Arizona to become the first non-native person to reach Arizona. If you go on to the next image, what you'll see is that we began to realize not only could we create works of art around characters like this based on the stories that were being told, we could create dramatic productions. This was the first actor, Dandi, who basically played Esteban, and goes back to your comment during the break of how even today you can see people dressed like this, honoring the spirit of Esteban and other great Black explorers who came to Arizona. And remember, if you want to put this into context, you got to realize that 1539, when Esteban first reached Arizona, was 80 years before the first African peoples reached Jamestown, Virginia in 1619. And so as a consequence, we seem to be neglected out here because this has become Spanish history, not our history. And yet Arizona is a part of the United States. So we'd have to say Esteban was the first African-based person to come to what is now part of the United States. Next slide.
I don't mean to interrupt you. This is so fascinating. So please, how long did it take Esteban to walk from Florida to Mexico? How long was that journey?
8 years.
Oh, my.
It took from 1528 to 1536 for him to reach. They started with a party of 300 under the Narvaez expedition. Most of them died. They built boats out of their leather goods and killed all their horses and embarked on what they thought was a sea journey. They were totally lost. When they began their journey in Florida, they thought they could reach Mexico City in 2 weeks. So they obviously didn't know much about geography. And you can see why. This map that we're showing on the screen right now is an early map of Baja California. Until Father Aquino arrived in 1690, people thought that the Baja Peninsula was actually an island. And it was Father Aquino who went far enough north to realize, no, it's connected. And these are the same kinds of areas that the next people that we'll talk about were actually exploring. Because as I said earlier in this talk, many, many people of African descent were appearing here in the Southwest, and we're not actually sure where they came from. Perfect example is a guy named Peje Yamo. The Pueblo Indians revolted against the Spanish, one of many revolts, in 1680 called the Great Pueblo Revolt. And one of the groups on the Native American or indigenous people's side was led by a large Black man with yellow eyes named Peje Yamo. Where'd he come from? And why was he on the Indian side rather than the other side? So a lot of the mysteries of the Spanish colonial period are still things we have to explore. And one of the things I focus on is getting into the emotions, if we can define emotions, of an ancient person rather than looking at them from the perspective of historical figures, because I don't feel that that's the most interesting part of some of these stories. And we'll see that as we go on to the next story. Next slide. In 1775, we realize now that the first group of soldiers came to what is now Tucson and founded the Tucson Presidio. They marched up from Tubac, which is 40 miles south of Tucson, and they were, of those 27 soldiers, four were of African descent. Now, that really whet my appetite for the stories that I'm telling now, because they weren't slaves. See, this is not a slave narrative. Arizona, New Mexico, the stories we're telling about people who were becoming free, like Estevan, and people who were already free, like the soldiers of the first expedition to what is now Tucson. In the same year, from just south of Tubac, Anza, Juan Bautista Anza, who you can see in the left of this particular picture, in the Spanish colonial uniform, left from what is now Mexico to march north. He'd already been to the Monterey Bay, San Francisco area, and he realized the soldiers he had left up there were not going to stay there because it was so different from where they'd come here in the Southwest. So he said to himself that they had to take families and create a community in order for them to remain up there. And this is a rendering, looks like a watercolor or oil on canvas, of the first step of the Anza expedition of October 1775. What's interesting is from this expedition, we got a lot of material because both Anza and Father Fonck, the priest on the journey, wrote very copious diaries. There were about 300 people, not counting soldiers and mule skinners and other support staff, and about 280 people in the family groups. And of the 280 people, the National Park Service suggests about 20% were of African descent. So it's interesting because Anza was recruiting people because of their family skill set. He was saying to himself, if I'm going to create a community out of nothing, then I've got to have people who have multiple skills. Everybody can garden, but not everybody is a weaver, like many of these women were. Not everybody's a blacksmith, like some of the men were. So I've got to recruit particular people with particular skill sets. And for 20% of them to be of African descent was very striking to me, because that tells me that's about the proportion of people of African descent who were in Tucson at the same time, because that was around the founding of Tucson the same year. Next slide. What's fascinating about this particular story, if we can go on to the next image, is that this is a story about women. And this is one of the women. And she's very controversial in terms of my research, because if you look at this image, she's older, she's looks somewhat infirm, and she's very Anglo-white. But if you go on to the next slide, you realize that different people have depicted her in different ways. This is a letter we're reading on the screen, talking about the recruitment of the settlers that I just talked about. Next image.
Let me just ask you about that last image. When the commander of the Tubac Presidio asked citizens that were interested in settling in San Francisco, that was the notice there. Can you tell me, if you had been an adult at that time, would you have been a settler?
I think yes, to a certain extent, because if you look at the soldiers that came to Tucson, the four who were of African descent, and you look at the settlers who went to San Francisco, many of those of African descent had come from Sinaloa. They'd been migrating north because the Spanish had been freeing their slaves since the conquest of 1521. They ended up in Sinaloa. This is the year 1775 that the expedition is about to leave Juarcitas and just south of Tubac. Now, to answer your question, what had happened is in Sinaloa, two successive hurricanes and a plague, probably typhoid, had hit in 1770s. Everything was wiped out. Many people died. So these were refugees. These were immigrant refugees of African descent coming from Sinaloa. And instead of going south into the slave trade, growing up around sugarcane, they continued to go north. And when they arrived in Juarcitas, just south of Tubac, Anza picked up on the fact that many of these people were very skilled in different crafts, in different skills, and said, I want these folks to go with me to found the city of San Francisco.
Do you know how many people signed up for this adventure?
Probably 280, mostly family groups, and another 20 to 30 or 40 who were the mule skinners, the soldiers on that journey. So I'd say just a little over 300. And the interesting person is this lady. The image we just saw is a lady named Maria Feliciana Arbayo. In the Cathedral of Culiacan, Arbayo was described as a mulata libre, a free Black woman. Her husband, who was a soldier, died just before the journey to San Francisco. And she had two children. One was about 4 years old, and the other was probably an infant. And she still was able to persuade Anza to take her on the journey, even though single women were probably not normally taken on such an arduous journey from what we now know is Tubac, Tucson, Arizona area, to walk pretty much all the way to San Francisco and the Monterey Bay. Now, the controversy is each depiction of her shows her a little bit different. If you go to the next slide, for example, what we see is another person who plays her role, who also plays the role of a young woman who came long before Arbayo. And that's the fascinating thing we're finding out, is the stories of women of courage and fortitude are very little known to the general public. This would have been a lady named Isabel de Olvera, who left from almost the same area of Mexico, Horcitas, and the area of Agua Caliente in Mexico, what is now Mexico, and decided to leave her hometown on a journey with another group of about 300 people. And we know that she ended up at the end of the year in Santa Fe, New Mexico. This would have been 1600s, perhaps as early as 1607. Now that's significant because remember, Jamestown was founded in Virginia in 1607. And here's a young lady, probably in her teens, who walked all the way. We don't know why she left, but we do know she arrived because she's on the rolls of people who arrived in Santa Fe that year. And so we have stories now of women that we never knew before. If you go on to the next image, we'll go back to Maria Feliciana Arbayo. Again, year 1775. This is what many of the women on the journey would have looked like along with the soldiers. Next image. And here's an image of from a German artist named Charles Christian Nall. This was a painting done oil on canvas, 1873. He was traveling through California, picking up stories like the ones I'm telling, and then depicting them for a larger audience. And this is called the Fandango from 1873. And you can see the lady in the center of the picture is very, very light-skinned. And that, I think, is the controversy. Because as I read this next passage, you can decide what she may have looked like. This is a diary entry by Father Pedro Font on December 17, 1775. Quote, at the night, with the joy of the arrival, they had just crossed the Colorado River, swum across, or been carried across on the backs of Native Americans in that area at what we now call Yuma Crossing. At the night, with the joy of the arrival in Alta California, all the people held a fandango. It was somewhat discordant, and a very bold widow who came with the expedition sang songs and verses which were not at all nice, and was applauded and cheered by the crowd. For this reason, a man who was with her became angry and punished her. Commander Anza, hearing of this, sallied forth from his tent and reprimanded the man because he was chastising her. And Anza said to him, leave her alone. She's doing just right. The Father Font said, no. I cannot permit this excess while I am present. So Father Font was a little upset because it was near Christmas and they were partying so hard that Anza actually brought out a barrel of brandy to warm up the people after their swim across the Colorado River. And that's the story of Maria Feliciana Arbayo. This is one of the renderings we get of her. And as you can see, she described as a mulata libre in her documents from Culiacan, is very Anglo in color. In fact, the only African-based people that you can see in this picture are kind of hidden in the background. And her children are not displayed at all, unless they're those people to the left in the back of the picture. They're also very light skinned. And for a long time in studying her story, I was concerned about her depiction. And then I realized the kicker of the story is when she arrived in California, she went to San Gabriel. She never made it to San Francisco, and married into the Pico family. The Pico family are the last Spanish governors of California. And to be the matriarch of a Spanish political family means she probably was very light skinned. So I'm not.
We have come to the end of this wonderful story. I mean, we've run out of time, but I would like to invite you back to continue the story. I'd like to thank you for sharing this piece of history with our listeners. As I said, I'd like to invite you back so we can continue the story. I want to thank all of our listeners of Boom Goddess Radio for spending time with us today. And believe me, we'll have Dr. Michael back to continue his story. Thank you for listening.